20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Hope you are having an absolutely wonderful weekend. I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to join us here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Before we get started, I want to shout out Joe Horse for becoming an all-new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Appreciate that a ton, Joe. If you haven't checked out those memberships yet, today's the day. Today's a great day to do it. We're going to be having our members Q&As all off season long. So make sure you check that out. And of course, we'll try to get some extra members only content coming up here to somewhere in the near future here as we get into this off season period. So looking forward to that as well. But Joe, appreciate you signing up. Of course, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. But I appreciate you guys again a ton for being here. Before we jump into our main topic for today, which is the biggest winners and losers of the Packers OTAs in minicamp. So not just this week, but going back to OTAs, we had 5 open practices over the course of the last 3 weeks. And we're going to go over who were the ones that came out on top, the ones that maybe didn't have the couple weeks that they, or I guess few weeks that they would have ideally liked. But we'll go through all of those today. Before we get there, it's a little bit of social media buzz about Jair Alexander's dad kind of going back and forth with some people, specifically, you know, stating that the offer was a lowball offer, not enough guarantees, whatever the case may be. I want to almost just put that to the side. You know, sometimes, you know, there's a lot of emotions with that, right? So I don't even necessarily care what the numbers were, what he said or anything like that. The piece that I want to touch on is that, you know, I saw some people saying like the Packers again mishandled that, they mistreated a player, whatever the case may be. I just want to go through a couple of things here. If this is the case, if in fact the Packers did give Jair Alexander an extremely low offer, right? Extremely minimal guarantees, low base salary, maybe some incentives attached to it. If that is what they did, and it's quite possible, certainly within the realm of possibility, right? What that tells me is a couple things. One, they really had no interest in bringing Jair back this entire time. That most of this was probably a charade towards the end of like, yeah, we're still working with Jair. Things are in a great spot. And, you know, we're working to see if we can get him back. A opportunity is there for a reconciliation. And we're working towards a contract right now and working on a restructured contract. We're making him a different offer. If they are, in fact, giving him an extreme lowball offer, if that's what happened, what that tells me is, that was a final call, one last bluff to the rest of the league that, hey, we might reconcile things here. You sure you don't want to call us and make an offer? You sure you don't want to offer us a 6th-round pick, 5th-round pick, 7th-round pick, anything, you know, cup of coffee, whatever. We're willing to take anything at this point. And it was that one last, you know, send it out, you know, Peter Schrager, that things are on a, and I'm not saying this is exactly what took place, but send it out, Peter Schrager, that, you know, things are actually better with Jair than what's listed on the outside. You know, send it out that the Packers are sending out a, you know, new contract offer and those sort of things. Again, I'm not specifically stating what that happens. I don't know if that is exactly the case, but again, going back to if they did in fact just lowball him and we're not looking to actually bring him back in a real way, to me, that's probably the last ditch effort just from the Packers to try to drum up some additional interest and be able to say that they did go to Jair with a new contract offer. The other thing is, again, there's that thought of like, well, the Packers did Jair Alexander dirty. I talked about this on the live Q&A for Happy Hour on Friday. I'm just not a believer for the most part. I'm sure there's always exceptions, right? But I'm just not a believer in trying to get after Green Bay for doing what they think is what's best for the team and having that business mentality, just like I'm not upset with a player like an Elgton Jenkins looking out for himself and trying to get what's best for him and trying to get a bigger contract while he still has some leverage in the moment. I hate all of that stuff. I hate, you know, Green Bay potentially lowballing players, and I hate the pack, you know, somewhat, you know, the extent of Packer players having to hold in or not show up to practice, any of the contract talk. I don't think any of us fell in love with the sport because there was, you know, haggling going on between agents and, you know, salary cap gurus to try to figure out the exact sweet spot of where offers should be made and what. That's not the fun part of this. So I would have loved if the Jair Alexander thing could have maybe been more transparent and more, you know, just better, more open dialogue, right? I would have loved if, you know, Elgton Jenkins was practicing out there at minicamp this week. Like we don't enjoy that aspect of the entire, you know, NFL, right? Just think it's the world that we live in. And I have no issue with Green Bay and Brian Gutekunst looking out for what they believe is in the best interest of the Green Bay Packers. And if that is, you know, going to Jair and trying to figure out how they can ultimately get a trade, and if that means that they are going to offer him a contract so that they can put that out there, whatever the case may be, do what you need to do. And I also don't think from a Green Bay standpoint, if they do get wind, because there was a report from Matt Schneidman that Jair Alexander wants to be in Green Bay. If they do get wind, all right, make him a contract offer, even if it's well below what you think is market value. If he says yes, great. If he says no, all right, you know, you can tear up the offer and move in a different direction and release him and send him free into free agency. But at least you can say you made an offer and said, hey, if you want to be here, here's the offer. This is a pretty simple negotiation, right? The Packers say, this is what we think you're worth. And Jair says, go bleep yourself. And I'm just kidding. He says, no, I'm not interested in that lowball offer. And the Packers say, all right, we're going to release you and go into free agency. And that's just, again, the situation that happens in these sort of scenarios. And I don't think that there is a quote unquote bad guy. I don't think Jair was the bad guy in the situation. I don't think the Packers were. I think it was two sides that probably wanted to move on that eventually got into that situation. And if the Packers did, in fact, again, just offer a low ball, like very minimal guaranteed deal, it just tells me more and more that they never really had any intention of bringing him back and probably made that determination very early on in the offseason. And the rest of this was just trying to get some sort of trade value for Jair. And when they finally recognized that that was out the window, they couldn't trade him. They lowballed him on an offer again, allegedly. He said no, and the only thing left is to release him. They release him. He gets an opportunity at free agency. We'll see where he ultimately ends up and what team ends up paying for his service and how much a team ends up paying for his services. All right, enough about that. Let's get into the biggest winners and losers from OTAs and mini camps. Again, 3 weeks of this, 5 practices open to the media. Here are my list of winners and losers from the past few weeks as we get ready for the true offseason and then training camp coming up in about 5 weeks. It'll be no surprise to anyone, my top winner for this entire OTA and mini camp, that anyone that's been listening to the show over the course of the past few weeks, it is Jordan Love. I'll say the same lame caveat over and over. I don't know what that means for training camp, the regular season, how he plays week one against the Lions. I have no idea. But I thought Jordan was pretty freaking spectacular all throughout OTAs and minicamp. I thought he had great zip on the ball. I thought he had great control in the pocket. I thought he was on balance. I thought his fundamentals looked good. I thought his accuracy, deep, intermediate, short, all were on point. I would say he averaged maybe one kind of like missed throw per practice. So like 5 missed throws, no big deal. I personally did not have him with a turnover-worthy play in those 5 practices. If there were, there were 2. The first one was a throw where he tried to get it up and over, like in between linebacker and I think it was probably a safety on the far side. Maybe it was a corner, but he tried to get it up and over, and it was Edgerrin Cooper that was the one that was underneath, and Edgerrin Cooper just happens to be a freak. So Edgerrin Cooper skies up and bats the ball away. I don't think there was ever an opportunity for that to be picked. I do wonder if Jordan ever saw Edgerrin and made it so that like he just didn't see him, which again is a little bit more of like it may have been high enough that it wasn't a turnover worthy play, but it could have maybe been if he didn't see him, you know, depending on again how you want to grade that. And then so that was one. Or did again he see him and he just tried to get it over and couldn't quite get it over him because Edgerrin Cooper's a freak? That would be the other one, which I understand. I get it. You're not expecting a linebacker to be able to make that freaky type of play, but Edgerrin Cooper wouldn't put it as an interceptable or turnover worthy play, but that would be one that was, you know, borderline, but again, probably just a really good play from Cooper. And then the other one was the play this past week to Carrington Valentine. It was in the 2-minute drill before the 74-yard bomb where he hits, or he's looking for like a little out and Carrington jumps it. First of all, tip of the cap to Carrington for jumping that route, being on top of it, reading his keys, and then firing and understanding the situation. And then, so he goes, tries to get the pick. Love still had it high enough. Carrington got his fingertips on it to bat it away. Valentine said he should have picked it off. Again, I know Bill Huber in his post game or post practice report said that he thought it could have potentially been picked off. If so, one turnover worthy play. I thought it was high enough and that, you know, Valentine did not have a great chance to pick it and that it was more of a tip pass, a pass breakup. But at worst, you're probably looking at one turnover worthy play. Again, I would put it at zero. And outside of those couple things was, again, just pinpoint accurate. The 7-on-7 that he did on the final day of practice, he would just sling it in there to Tucker Kraft, Romeo Doubs, Matthew Golden, time after time after time, knew exactly where to go with the ball. The 2-minute drill, of course, the 74-yard bomb to Mecole Hardman. I talked about the play in OTAs where he comes up. I think it was a 2-minute drill, if I remember correctly. He comes up to the line, recognizes with under 10 seconds left that the defense is going to blitz, calls a check, gets Luke Musgrave in line to have an extra player to pick up the blitz, gets everyone set, gets everyone the checks that they need, gets a snap off with about 2 seconds, no panic whatsoever, understands that Matthew Golden's going to get one-on-one coverage. It's going to get a probably pretty easy release to the outside on an out route. Exactly what he gets. Golden is on the out. Love hits him in stride. Golden picks up about 8 yards and gets out of bounds. Just little things like that. And when I say complete and total control of the offense, I mean pre-snap, post-snap, going through his progressions, understanding his reads, understanding his assignment. And I thought, too, not trying to do too much. Understanding what the play design was supposed to do. I saw him check it down numerous occasions. I also saw him throw some ridiculously awesome throws down the field. Also saw him see him, again, go through his progressions and find some of his intermediate routes. Whatever the play called for and whatever the defense dictated, he was able to find the solution to it over and over and over and over again, to the point where the defense at some point had to be getting a little frustrated that they didn't have any answers for it. Of course, when you have a pass rush and you're actually in training camp and preseason and regular season and the bullets are flying live, that's going to be something that's a little bit more, it ups the ante a little bit and it makes it a lot more complicated. And like I said, that's why we don't know how this is going to carry over. But as mentioned a few different times, if it were the alternative, and we were talking about Jordan having a really rough OTA minicamp and he was consistently throwing interceptions and looked jittery in the pocket, his accuracy was all over the place, you'd be freaking the heck out. You'd be on panic fest. And you would be not, you know, it would be a nightmare, right? Social media would be ablaze with Jordan Love is a bust and start Malik Willis and everything else. So I'm very thankful that we're not in that realm, that Jordan looked awesome, and hopefully he is able to carry that over into training camp in the regular season. And if OTAs and mini camps are any indication, we are in for a very, very fun Jordan Love season. My first set of losers are Colin Oliver, Micah Robinson, and John Williams. This is of no fault of their own. It's just you are three rookies. In fact, three back of the draft rookies, a late fifth and 2 7th round picks in Colin Oliver, Micah Robinson, and John Williams, that you're coming into OTAs and mini camps to start to make a name for yourself, to earn that draft status, and to get your feet wet and ultimately start your career as Green Bay Packers. And instead, Colin Oliver misses all of OTAs and minicamps with an injury in the rehab group. Micah Robinson was at OTAs, and I think the first minicamp, if I remember correctly, but certainly missed some time in practice in minicamps as well. And then John Williams, we haven't seen since rookie minicamp. I don't know what's the injury issue there, what's exactly going on, but we haven't seen him at all. With rookies, as I've talked about a million times, it is so important that you get them off to a strong start. And if they're ready by training camp, it's not going to be the end of the world. It's not a brutal scenario. But as fifth and seventh round rookies, you really want to get out there, start learning the system, getting out there with your teammates, and just really getting ingrained in everything. And instead, all three of them are not practicing at all. Again, I hate that for rookies more than anything else in the world. So Colin Oliver, Micah Robinson, John Williams, of no fault of their own, just their injury status has certainly kept them on the sidelines and has had them not participating, which is definitely rough for rookies that, again, are on the back end of the draft and trying to earn a roster spot this upcoming season. We'll be right back. Next winner, Cornelius Johnson. How could it not be? Now, I don't think he did anything really super noteworthy in OTAs. I don't even know they did anything noteworthy in the first mini camp, but the second mini camp, has four catches on a 2-minute drive, including a bomb down the field, including the final catch to get them into great field goal range, and then including a key fourth down play early in the drive to extend the drive and ultimately get them in field goal range down the line. So Cornelius Johnson was awesome there. And then in the 7-on-7 red zone period, Elgersma to Cornelius Johnson, the unstoppable duo, two consecutive touchdowns in the 7-on-7 drill. Johnson continued to work himself open and really kind of made a little bit of a name for himself over this past week. So I thought he was really good, really impressive. Again, there was the one play where he ran the wrong route and Matt LaFleur was willing to get after him and tell him about it. But outside of that, I thought he had a really good, especially week this week, and is starting to get his name in that practice squad conversation. We'll see if he can get anything above that. We'll take it one step at a time, but a really nice mini camp, especially in this offseason has been good for Cornelius Johnson so far. Loser is Jonathan Baldwin. Again, this is, I'm not sure, anything of his own accord. I talked about this a little bit the other day. Jonathan Baldwin was brought in as an undrafted free agent and listed as a corner on the, you know, Packers roster and on the depth chart and everything. And instead, and a lot of people, by the way, Dane Brugler, amongst others, thought he was going to be a safety. So he's a defensive back. He's probably safety, probably more like a Javon Bullard, right? Safety who can also play a little bit of nickel, but he is now at safety. He practiced at safety in individuals. He practiced at safety in team. And why he's the loser for this is not because of anything he did on the field. It's not because he's a safety, but for him, he went from a position that is a little bit in tatters right now. Kamal Haddon's out. Kalen King is out. Micah Robinson is out. Nate Hobbs missed a practice this week. They just released Jaire Alexander. Like, thankfully for Green Bay, Keyshawn Nixon and Carrington Valentine have been healthy this entire time, but there seems to be a wide open door to corner. Now, Baldwin was never going to be an outside corner. He was always going to be more of a slot guy, but there always is, it seems like there's a huge opportunity to earn snaps at corner, or at least be the fourth, fifth, or sixth guy. So Baldwin goes from a position which is incredibly barren, that's the wrong word, but just is lacking in depth at the moment, to a position where you've got five guys that seem really likely to make the roster. Xavier McKinney's not going anywhere. Bullard's not going anywhere. Evan Williams isn't going anywhere. And then you have to battle it out with Ketan Oladapo, who's probably not going anywhere, and Zane Anderson, not to mention Omar Brown, who made a couple spot appearances this past year. That is a massively tough group to break into, so much harder than cornerback. So for Jonathan Baldwin, corner probably would have been the better avenue, but instead he gets moved back to safety. Next winner is Donovan Jennings. You're not going to hear many offensive linemen, defensive linemen, edge rushers on this entire group because, quite frankly, it's not real offensive line or defensive line play in any facet. Obviously 7-on-7s are not there, but even the 2-minute drills, you just don't see enough. And these guys are just going nowhere near half speed, nowhere near full speed, closer to half speed. And then they're letting up to not, it's not real football. I'll put it that way. But for Donovan Jennings, whether Matt LaFleur knew about it or not, and even though Donovan Jennings didn't get to keep his starting spot on the final day of minicamp, I still think the fact that Donovan Jennings got in for a couple days in minicamps as a starter with the ones, it's something. And whether that was Butkus that did it, whether that was Stenovich that did it, it could have been just about anyone. Clearly, it wasn't Matt LaFleur, at least per Matt LaFleur. He didn't know about it, but somebody put him in that role. And they're clearly differentiating the two sides of the field. He got to be on the top side, and he got to be the starter at left guard. Also, he got to cross train at center on the third day of minicamp. So this is a player, undrafted free agent, 2024. There was a decent amount of buzz. Probably should have been drafted. He was good enough to be drafted. This is the ultimate Packers type. High relative athletic score that played tackle in college and is now moving into the interior. Green Bay Packers have had a billion success stories like that. Can Donovan Jennings be the latest? We'll have to wait and see. But again, just the fact that he got reps with the ones, I think is noteworthy nonetheless, and is a good place to be in for Donovan Jennings as we get ready for training camp here coming up in just over a month. The loser is Travis Glover. Well, he is sitting to the side doing rehab work, and again, no fault of his own or anything like that, at least that I know of. You get Donovan Jennings that gets to work with the ones. They drafted Anthony Belton in the second round this offseason. Now, granted, he did not work with the ones, but that's another player you're going to have to navigate. Kadeem Telford got time with the ones. Jacob Monk got a ton of time. So while all of these young players got to rotate in and get time with the ones and those sort of things, Travis Glover was left to the side just working out with a trainer, both in individual and team drills. So I'm sure he would have loved to have been out there. But he instead had to watch all these players get these key opportunities while he didn't get to practice at all. My next two winners, Bo Melton and Mecole Hardman. And we'll just do the loser as well. The loser's Malik Heath. I thought Malik Heath actually had a pretty good mini camp in OTAs. He caught everything his way, had some really nice catches, had one I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday, where he had a couple really nice catches in the 2-minute drills. Like he did some good things. But I think if you're looking at added value over the course of the last few weeks, Mecole Hardman is getting reps as a punt returner, but also had two massive touchdowns, a 74-yarder from Jordan Love, and then, of course, that mini Hail Mary from Sean Clifford as well. He looks the part. He's a veteran out there. He's immediately the oldest wide receiver in the locker room, and he fits in really well with the team, and I've liked what I've seen so far. Meanwhile, Bo Melton, we've talked about it over and over and over and over, still practicing that wide receiver, now getting time legitimately with the defensive backfield and specifically at corner, and then was on the first team for punt team, punt return, kickoff unit. If you can do all of that stuff, it just adds so much value. So for me, Bo Melton and Mecole Hardman were the winners because they took a step in a positive direction of adding more value to their resume, where Malik Heath is now going to just have to be this awesome wide receiver that probably is like a run blocker extraordinaire that can maybe play a little bit of teams as well if he wants a chance. I like Malik Heath, but I think Bo Melton and Mecole Hardman in minicamp have maybe taken a step in the right direction to making themselves just a bit more valuable for that potential number 6 wide receiver spot. Next up as a winner is Colby Wooden. I think Colby Wooden putting on weight and trying to learn a little bit more of the one tack or the nose tackle is really smart. I don't think he had the most juice as a 3 technique, and this team has plenty of 3 technique players that can play there. Clark can play that. Devontae Wyatt can play that. Carl Brooks can play that. I even think Brinson can play it a little bit. And then you've got guys like LVN who can kick inside. I just think they have too many options, and I don't think, you know, Colby Wooden was in a situation where he was going to be able to earn a ton of snaps and maybe even his roster spot was in jeopardy. But if he shows that he can go out and stop the run consistently, I think that will be a huge, huge win for Colby Wooden and a way for him, I think, to make the team and maybe just add something a little bit more value, where Green Bay has been desperate to try to find that backup to Kenny Clark. If they feel comfortable with that being Colby Wooden, that would be, I think, a lot more favorable for Packers fans, as you haven't really picked up that Kenny Clark replacement, and it should give Colby Wooden a much better chance of making the team. My loser next is Kalen King. I'll say once again, this is not of anything that he did on the field, but he missed the last couple of days with some sort of arm issue. He's got a cast on the arm. And this is the time where you've had so much opportunity out there to go improve yourself. And in this situation, you know, again, you have a bunch of corners that are hurt. You've got Jair Alexander gets released and everyone wants Kalen King and maybe to a lesser extent, Kamal Haddon to step up big. And unfortunately, right as you have all this opportunity in front of you, you injure your arm and you miss the final 2 days of mini camp. So bummer for him, I am sure, but that definitely put him a little bit more in the, I don't even know if we want to say loser, but the bummer category, to say the least. Two winners at linebacker, Isaiah Simmons and Tyron Hopper. I thought both these players looked good. I thought they looked spry. I thought they looked fast. Tyron Hopper made a couple plays that I thought I did do a double take. I thought with the speed, it looked like Adrian Cooper for a second. He looks faster. He still looks really, really, really strong. Looks like he's a little bit more assignment sure and just playing more naturally and playing faster. That's going to be a big step for him. Then Isaiah Simmons, we know that all of the athleticism is there. The measurables are there. But I thought when he got in the game, he looked good. He looked like he knew the part. They're focusing him on the Sam and the Will, keeping things a little bit more easy for him and digestible for him. I love that idea from Jeff Hafley. Let's see what it looks like. Despite him being an athletic marvel, he has not been able to translate it into good defensive football. I think he's going to be a core special teamer, but I do think there's a lot to unlock there. And if anyone can unlock it, hopefully it is Jeff Hafley. And it would not surprise me if it was Jeff Hafley. Loser is Gregory Jr. There's a little bit of a plus minus here. On the plus side, Gregory Jr. actually got to spend time with the ones. I think at the beginning, it was kind of like we talked about, not a lot of corners, and you want your fourth, fifth, sixth guy to be on the other end to get more time, and then Junior ends up on the other side. But it seemed like he actually got a few legitimate reps with the ones on the final day of minicamp, just with all the injuries that they had. But he also got beat on numerous occasions, including deep down the field. So I didn't think that he had specifically a great minicamp or OTA. He did get himself some opportunity with the ones, but he did look a little bit overwhelmed at times when being thrown into those situations. I've got sort of a lightning round the rest of the way, 4 additional winners that were, I think, in good positions via OTAs and mini camps. The first one is Christian Watson. Not a doctor, not pretending to be a doctor, but just his ability to be moving around the way that he's moving around, and then to hear from Matt LaFleur that he is, you know, doing outstanding, he's ahead of schedule, that's all you can hope for. And to me, the winners are the Packers fans and the Packers in this situation, but none bigger than Christian Watson. If he can get back early enough and go out and have a great season, he still has the opportunity to go out and get a big contract next year. So rooting for him no matter what, whatever the situation may be, whether he ends up back in Green Bay next year, whatever, after this year, I mean, he deserves, with all the work that he's put in, to get healthy sooner rather than later. He deserves a stretch of play where he can go out and show what he's capable of while not being hurt. I don't know that that's ever going to happen this year, coming back from those two devastating injuries, but I love to hear that he's ahead of schedule so far. My next winner, Jaire Alexander. We'll keep this one short and sweet. He finally got released. I think this is probably, you might make the argument of, yeah, he probably would have been able to, or maybe enjoyed playing in Green Bay on that $17.5 million deal, and losing all of that is a little bit of a loss. But I think at this point in time, he was probably ready to just be free and go find his team for 2025. And now he has the opportunity to do that. The entire saga is behind him and the Packers. Each side can move on, and now Jaire can go find his new team, which I'm sure he's very excited about. Next winner, Malik Willis. I thought Willis looked really good all throughout OTAs and mini camps, and most importantly, his first real opportunity to get to know this Matt LaFleur offense probably a little bit more intimately in the offseason. And I think he is just really ingrained in it. I think he is really taking a step understanding the offense better. And what I love about Willis so far is, I think there was one play where I saw they ran like a read option with Malik Willis. Outside of that, it was the entirety of the Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love offense that he looked very comfortable running. So last year, I thought Malik Willis had a ton of success and deserves so much freaking credit. But Matt LaFleur kind of made an offense that was specifically for Malik Willis and gave him that opportunity to run it. It was certainly still a complex offense, and Willis deserves so much credit, but Matt had to kind of build that for him. And now, I think if Malik Willis were to go in, I think you can just kind of continue to run your offense. And I think him being a little bit more involved this offseason, well, last year, of course, he didn't get to at all because he got traded right before the start of the season. And I think him being able to have that full offseason program has been really beneficial, and he looks really, really good. And last but not least, the last winner, Brandon McManus. I think he maybe missed one field goal the entire time. The beautiful thing, didn't even have to worry about it. Meaning I'll let the other beat guys track the makes and the misses, and not of all the things that I take, you know, great care of, and, you know, just keep an extra eye on and looking at all the nerdy things. I spent all last year watching, you know, all these really not great kickers and trying to figure out who's going to make it. The Greg Josephs, the Anders Carlsons, we can go on and on, right? And it was so refreshing just to see Brandon McManus out there, just enjoy it and watching him kick after kick after kick, drill all these kicks, including a 58 yarder to send mini camp home 40 minutes early. Love that for McManus. He's looked really, really good and certainly deserving of some recognition for how he did during OTAs and mini camps. So, my full list of winners and losers through OTAs and mini camps. Winner, Jordan Love. Losers, Colin Oliver, Micah Robinson, and John Williams due to missed time. Winner, Cornelius Johnson. Loser, Jonathan Baldwin. Winner, Donovan Jennings. Loser, Travis Glover. Winners, Bo Melton and Mecole Hardman. Loser, Malik Heath. Winner, Colby Wooden. Loser, Kalen King. Winners, Isaiah Simmons and Tyron Hopper. Loser, Gregory Jr. And then Christian Watson, Jaire Alexander, Malik Willis, and Brandon McManus, all winners as well. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so incredibly much for joining me. I'll be right back here tomorrow with an all-new episode. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, most hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Pilata, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Ataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Conner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winklestinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. I'll see you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.